podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. We're a quarter of the way through the 100 competition after a week of matches, both men and women. So in this show, we're going to review the first week of the competition and say what we think of it. We're also going to hear from our virtual club members about their views. Some of them have been to games and many of them have watched them on telly. So definitely a review of the 100 in the show. And also, I've been up and down the country, actually, this week. I've been with Jofra Archer filming over the weekend in Brighton. And now I'm up in North Yorkshire on a cricket tour, a sort of village cricket tour. So we'll talk about Jofra Archer and we'll talk about village cricket a little bit in the second half of this show. Simon, you've been in situ studying the 100 in great detail. So what do you think?
Well, I've been watching quite a lot of it, actually. I haven't been to a game yet, but I've watched a lot on television, both the men's and the women's. I think one thing that really struck me was something that happened last week. I got up, went down to have my breakfast just before 8 o'clock in the morning. I think it was either Wednesday or Thursday last week. My wife had Heart Radio on the radio. I normally listen to either the Today programme or Five Live in the morning.
No, you don't, Heart. You liar. You listen to Heart. We know you. You even listen to Kiss FM, I reckon.
She had Heart Radio on. She likes the tunes in the morning. And just before the 8 o'clock news, what did I hear? An advert for the 100, which really made me realise sort of how the competition was being promoted. And one of the comments about the 100 is being how much it has been sold, if you like, how much effort has gone into it being sold. It's got a big marketing budget, and that really brought it home to me. So you feel with that sort of marketing budget, it should be a success. I mean, that's the whole point, isn't it, of marketing, of advertising, is to create a buzz around the competition and to get people interested. I have to say, when it started off, I actually sort of found it quite strangely addictive, the first few days of the competition. And I did actually watch quite a lot. And, you watch all sorts of new things, like the graphics on the screen, which looked odd to start with, but I think I've become used to them by now. I suppose one question I have about the competition is how it's going to cope with the loss of the England players in the next few days. I think they have added some star quality to it. Bairstow whacking it around last night, for example. I mean, Stokes was at the thick of it the other evening with his captaincy dropping a catch on the boundary.
He didn't come out of it too well, did he?
No, exactly. But he's been the heart of it. Joe Root's been playing. So it has had that star quality. And that is going to go. And the focus is, to some extent, going to switch to the Test series with India, which starts next Wednesday at Trent Bridge.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that what, a competition like this needs is star quality. And I talked about last week when we were previewing it, that the word authenticity, it has to be good quality. It has to be a high standard to merit and reflect the excellent marketing that's been done on it. I mean, almost excessive marketing. I mean, as you say, if it appears on Heart FM, etc., Radio 1, those kind of places where younger people obviously are tuned in, and just the almost the sort of blanket marketing that's been going on. In fact, my take on it in a way is, if you threw this amount of promotion and PR and stuff at any tournament, it would do pretty well. And that's the key to it. I sort of, in a way, feel quite sad that cricket hasn't had this level of promotion, really, since, I suppose, the Channel 4 years when, if you remember, when Test cricket was on Channel 4, there was a lot of big advertising campaigns around city centres with, billboards saying, cricket's new, have you tried it, sort of thing. And generally, that park viewing, big screens up in parks and things like that. And that really did capture the nation's attention in the same way as this, the 100, is trying to. I think it suffers a little bit from, you know, a couple of games on the BBC and then it sort of disappeared again and it's back on Sky. Sky, I think, doing an excellent job of it. I think their coverage is really good. And basically the reason for that is they stick to the cricket. They just basically do the cricket as well as they can with some good pundits and don't get sort of strayed or drawn into the kind of crowd cheering pieces, vox poppy type stuff. You know, it does really focus on the cricket, and that's good. And the cricket in the main has been excellent. And I think, as we'll hear from some of our virtual cricket club members, it's been particularly good for the women's game.
This is Jacob from East Yorkshire. So my take on the 100, mostly positive, great for the women's game, great to see families. Love the explanations and descriptions of some of the nuances and rules of the game. Great to see families being there. So yeah, all positive. And more importantly, I think some of the money is going to filter down to the counties as well. So great news all overall, really.
Hi, this is Umar from Bedford. My take on the 100 is it's been very good for the women's game. I love how they're aligned with the men's team, which can only lead to greater interaction between both sides of the sport. Equally, what's most pleasing is I've had a few non-cricket friends who have asked me about the 100, and hopefully that leads them to getting more involved in the game and starting to enjoy essentially Test cricket, which is what it's all about. But so far, so good.
Hi, my name's Paul. I'm from Hampton in southwest London. As for the 100, I've always been a believer in the fact that we need a franchise competition in this country to sort of rival and compete with the likes of the IPL and the BBL. I was very sceptical when it was first announced about the new format, although the more I think about it, the more I think it's the right thing to do for a franchise model is to introduce the 100. If for nothing else, it preserves the Blast as the premier T20 competition in this country, and hence the county structure that sits alongside it. I still think there's issues to be resolved around scheduling, which is probably a different discussion for another day. As far as the games go and what's happened so far, I found it really exciting, really enjoyed watching it. My kids and I went to the game in London on Sunday that was unfortunately, well, the second half of it was rained off, but they enjoyed it enough to want to go again, which we're going to do next week. So I'm really excited and looking forward to that. And I think so far it's largely been a success.
Hello, it's Derek from Fenny Compton in Warwickshire. I went to the Edgbaston matches last Friday. They were great fun, great family atmosphere, loads of children there, women, grandparents, the whole range. It was extremely loud, the music was great, added to the atmosphere, but overall I think it was a great experience. I think there's a place for this in the season alongside the traditional county calendar, and that comes from a long-standing member of Worcestershire.
Omar from Edinburgh. I was initially a sceptic of the tournament as I didn't feel that world cricket needed another format, especially given that 2020 could fill the void, in my opinion. However, I have enjoyed the opening games. A couple of things I will say is that I think the pitches that have been used so far have been tired pitches, and I think for a new tournament you really need newer pitches for spectators to get the best value out of the game. And secondly, I like the rule about penalising the fielding team if they don't bowl their number of balls at the right time, and I think that could be brought into the wider game. But generally, for someone that was initially sceptical, I have enjoyed it so far.
Hi, this is Jake from Staffordshire. I've enjoyed watching the 100 games so far. I think the standard of cricket's been really high, as expected. The exposure for the women's game has been great as well, although I don't really see why that couldn't have happened beforehand with existing formats and tournaments. I think like any other franchise tournament, I don't really feel a strong affinity to any team, so I find it difficult to really feel invested in the games, and I don't really care who wins them. But what I would say is that both my brother and another friend of mine, neither of which have previously shown an interest in cricket, have watched every game, and they're constantly telling me how much they're enjoying it, which I guess was the point of the 100 in the first place.
Hi, I'm Will, and I'm 50-50 about the 100 now that we are a week in. I like the 8 teams involved. I think it's good for young children, and it's nice to see families bringing their son or daughters to the games. However, I dislike the graphics. When you're watching the game on TV, I find them too distracting on the side of the screen with the balls counting down and then the balls counting up. I'm going to a game in about a week's time at Lord's. I'm going to see the London Spirit versus the Northern Superchargers. So I will make a decision on whether I like the competition or not.
I'm Richard from London. I went to the men's game at the Oval. The atmosphere was excellent, the crowd enthusiastic, cricket skills of good T20 quality. On the debit side, music was a loud distraction. The scoreboard had virtually no info other than the score. I didn't know Josh Butler had been playing until I read a match report later on the news. What elevated it above a T20? In the end, not much. The whole thing felt unnecessary, really. But I still welcome anything that gets children interested in cricket.
Hi, my name's Rob from Fairlight. I think the 100 has been quite good so far. I think occasionally both the ladies and the men's have been let down by playing on used pitches. Surely the idea is to attract more crowds, more exciting matches, and also, of course, attract young viewers. So more runs, better pitches, but overall good start.
Interesting, just as an aside, one person I knew who watched a few games on telly and got his 10-year-old daughter to watch one match, and she'd never watched cricket before, and she said after the game, that was really fun, but can't they make it shorter? So, oh my God, you know, it's never ending, this process of keeping the youth interested with their short attention spans. But I think in the main, actually, I'd say one thing that I really like is the urgency, that the fact that if you overrun with your balls delivered, you lose a fielder from the boundary. That penalty has really created an urgency on the field. Not many teams have suffered that punishment. There's just that feeling of purpose and a little bit more sort of intent to get back to your mark and get the over or the balls delivered, which I think is great for the game overall and something we've been crying out for.
Yeah, a couple of things there. That 10-year-old who said, can they make the game shorter? I mean, who knows? I mean, you can see it happening, can't you? You can see it happening in the future. I mean, we already have T10. There's going to be a 90-ball competition in the winter as well. You can see over time things being reviewed. Now, they'll have a look at the 100. They'll have a look at T20 and say, how can we improve it? What doesn't work? The game always evolves. You know, we've evolved from 60 over or 65 over one-day cricket from 1963 to 60 overs, 55, 40 overs. 20 overs, so it is coming down. You know, Test cricket, obviously, at the start, we've had 2-day cricket, 3-day cricket, 4-day cricket, 5-day cricket. You know, it will evolve. You feel it's almost inevitable. The other thing to say, this idea of urgency, and I agree with you. I like this regulation which says you've got to bring a fielder inside the circle if you go over your time allotted, and it has happened a few times actually. Do you think that there is a lesson for the longer form of the game in this? I'm thinking of Test cricket, and we've been talking about slow over eights, and people say, oh, you bang on about slow over eights in Test cricket, you know, just give it a rest. But other people, you know, it is an issue, and you know, the over eights are slow. You go to a Test match, and you know, everyone, there's this, you do have stages in the game where people are just standing around and nothing is happening. So do you think there is something in this? Do you think the game will look at this as a result of what's going on in the 100 and a lesson will be learned? Or, you know, some will say, what could we do in Test cricket to improve the over eight? Or do you think it's not a problem that, you know, actually most games these days don't end in a draw, so, you know, we get the game in anyway despite the slow over eights?
No, I think it's definitely a lesson for the Test match game. And the quicker that they do something about it, the better. There is far too much standing about in Test cricket. And I think someone like Stuart Broad is purposeful when he goes back to his run, to the end of his run, and starts again. But lots of bowlers just loiter, drift around, people wandering to their fielding positions. You know, Test cricket is a long game. I mean, it is easier to be a bit more urgent when you're only out there for 100 balls, an hour and a half or something. in long test match days with 2.25 hour sessions, and you're in the field all day, they are tiring. But in a way, if you show a bit more urgency, you can get those overs bowled quicker and get off the field faster. So I think that actually it will help the players ultimately, and you get into a rhythm as well as a player to get back to your mark quicker. And you it doesn't matter what format of the game, you just get into a habit of doing it. I think the penalties are to take a fielder off, and in the case of the 100, take it off the boundary. In the case of Test cricket, you just take a fielder off. If they haven't finished the overs by the set time, that you lose a fielder. And I tell you what, bowlers, and we heard Catherine Brunt saying this on our virtual cricket club last week, I'm not going to be the one who has to sacrifice a fielder in my final overs of the day. Well, I can imagine Jimmy Anderson wouldn't be too happy about having to give up, a long leg or a mid-on or something like that, having to bowl the last over of the day. And he'd be right on fielders' backs to get into positions quickly. Otherwise, my bowling figures are going to suffer here. So I think it is a good way of solving a problem, and hopefully it will be taken up.
Yeah, well, it has been a notable feature of the 100 in the first week, the fact that the fielder has to come inside. And captain, you've seen it clearly up on the scoreboard, the time ticking away, and the umpire say, no, look, tapping the watch right, you've got to bring one in. And it hasn't totally focused the mind, because there have been overrate penalties. Whether they can find a solution in Test cricket remains to be seen. One thing, aspect of the 100 that they brought in to try to speed the game up was so you don't change ends. What I actually noticed, or don't change ends as regularly after 6 balls, it's after 10 balls. What I've noticed just from watching on the TV, and I haven't been to a game yet, is that you actually don't really notice which end the bowling is coming from. The white cards go up. That looks a bit half-assed. The white cards.
Yeah.
It's like a sort of clip pen on a white card that the umpire uses.
It's like one of those tourist guides, isn't it? Actually, when guide showing Japanese tourists around London, sort of putting their arm up, saying, "Follow me, follow me."
Yeah, that to me, that just looked a bit amateur night. But I mean, there we go. So it's only a very small thing. It actually doesn't really matter, because it does the job, doesn't it? Everyone knows, or we've come used to the fact that means we've come to the end of that particular segment of bowling. But yeah, you don't notice which end the bowling is from on TV. That's one thing I've noticed. So in a way, it hasn't really felt. It's a big thing to you've got to change ends after 6 balls. Hasn't. You wouldn't know it at all.
Do you know that? I'll tell you a great fact, actually. The demon Frederick Spofforth, in the famous Test match of 1882, when he bowled England out for 77 in the final innings to win the match by 7-8 runs or something, and of course that was the Test match that created the obituary of English cricket and therefore the Ashes. He actually bowled, I think that innings was something like 50 overs, and he bowled something like 33 overs out of the 50, because in those days, a bowler could bowl 2 successive overs if he switched ends. So you could bowl, one over from the nursery end, and then if you fancied it, you could go up the pavilion end and bowl another over. So he quite often bowled successive overs, and he bowled more than half in that innings, and it used to be permitted. So, they've brought in something in this 100, which actually is an old ruse, which happened in the 1880s.
Yeah, well, there you are. The game changes, but it also goes back to
stays the same
as well. Yeah, that's a really interesting fact. I did not know that.
Always learn something on this show, don't you, Simon?
Well, exactly. it does show. I mean, it does show how much the game has evolved over time. I mean, one thing that has been going on, of course, this week has been a sort of raging social media battle between the fours and the antis in the 100. And what will be interesting when England do play their Test series against India is if that doesn't go well, and then as we were saying last week, and then if the Ashes don't go well, people say, well, look, it's all very well having this white ball success, but look how much red ball has been neglected. So that, that is something for the future to keep an eye on. But we're quarter of the way through the group matches. The Trent Rockets and the Welsh Fire are top in the men's, but bottom in the women's. And the Southern Brave a bottom in the men's, but joint top in the women's. That's after a quarter of the matches anyway. I also noticed as well that the Welsh Fire, no Welsh or Glamorgan players in their 11 for their match last night. I think I heard Dinesh Kartik saying the Welsh are on fire. Well, there's actually no Welsh players in their lineup at all.
I suppose they've got Matthew Maynard in the coaching staff, at least.
Indeed. Anyway, so I think the competition's had a decent start, a reasonable start, but you know, far too early to say whether it will be a success. I mean, Cardiff looked a bit of a sorry sight last night because of the crowd restrictions. You know, it does need that crowd. It does need that atmosphere. I suppose my one sort of bugbear in the first week, as I said, I find it sort of strangely addictive. I've enjoyed watching some of the matches. My one bugbear is sort of constantly being told what a great atmosphere it is. How fantastic it is. I think just let that come out of the television screen. I think that's one thing I felt. If the product's good, it will display itself. Don't patronise the viewers. They don't need to be patronised. They'll latch on to a good thing if it is indeed a good thing.
Yeah, well, you know, goes back to my original line, really. Be authentic.
Well, one player hasn't featured in the 100 yet, and a player who's not in England's squad for the first and second test matches that was selected last week for the series against India, which starts next week, is Jofra Archer. He's missed most of the season through injury, but you spent some time with him because you're making this World Cup documentary. You spent some time with him over the weekend, Yoz. What's his sort of state of mind and state of fitness?
Well, he's played one game for Sussex in the Blast where he wasn't at full bore. I think he got through his four overs, but not, you know, definitely not at full pace. And I actually asked him when we were down in Sussex last weekend what his prospects of returning are. And he basically said in his quite sort of laconic way, I'm not in a hurry. He certainly looks in immaculate condition, but he's just sort of biding his time. I think the focus will be on Test cricket. I imagine he's probably unlikely to play in the 100. In a way, I think that the intensity of one-day cricket, especially the shortest formats, are quite tough for a bowler because you've got to be on it straight away. There's no scope to kind of ease into your spell and, you know, bowl a couple of looseners and all that. You've got to be right on it. You've got to, at the end of the innings, if you're bowling at the death, you've got to be bowling those Yorkers absolutely pinpoint accurate at your maximum speed. Otherwise, it's going to disappear out of the park. So I think actually that the intensity of short format is quite tough for somebody who's coming back from an injury like this. What is his injury, by the way? He said to me that they'd found a sort of funny little bit of extra bone that had grown in the elbow, and that was causing pain and restriction, and so he's had that sort of shaved off. His elbows look fine now. He's obviously not got any bandages or anything on them. There will be a bit of scar tissue deep inside them, and it'll just take time for that to ease off. But I think his aim will be to play perhaps the latter part of the Test series against India, assuming he can get a bit of four-day cricket with Sussex first. Because unless you actually try it out over a full day, you don't really know how your injury is going to bear up. And you don't want to be playing in a Test match first up. So I think probably he's going to have to bide his time and wait until the latter part of the summer to play a bit for Sussex and then hopefully get back in the groove. Interesting guy, actually. I mean, you know, not one thing we found quite interesting was that when you talk to him, he just looks at his phone all the time. And it's not, you could interpret that as rudeness, but actually it's not. It's just habit. And, you know, he sort of seems to be sending messages while talking at the same time. So, but, you know, we had an interesting couple of days talking about his life, the influence of his mother, who was there with him and has been obviously his great strength. And she said that she actually said a prayer before the World Cup final with him, and that's quite interesting. You know, generally he's cruising around. He lives in the same block of flats as Chris Jordan, who lives one floor up, and they share a dog, a French bulldog, which they sort of take for walks alternately whenever one of them's at home. An interesting experience. I just think he's going to have to take his time before he comes back for real.
Well, from what you're saying there, Yoz, it doesn't sound as if he's going to play in the Test Series against India, because if he's got to play some four-day cricket, there isn't any four-day cricket until September, and then you play a four-day match. I mean, I suppose he could play a four-day match for Sussex and then play in the final Test match, but the Test Series against India ends in the middle of September, and of course the county championship season goes to the end of September with this sort of new format. So it sounds as though in one sense it's a race against time, but in the other sense it seems as though he's prepared to take his time. So it may well be that we don't see him play for England at all this summer, but you know, having said that, of course there's plenty of cricket coming up with England's preparations
he could play in the Royal London Cup, actually,
yeah,
which is longer.
But if he's got, he could do it.
Which is longer games and more overs, and also less pressure, you know, because it's a sort of not a second team competition exactly, but I mean, it's not got the same prominence as the 100 has. So that would be another way of him. He was actually lined up to play for Sussex in a game in that competition and then didn't in the end. So right. I suppose that's the other solution to giving him some overs, getting some overs under his belt without the spotlight of a very, you know, hard international competition.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you're right, though. You do need that preparation before you go into a Test match, don't you? You need to have those overs. 20 overs, say, in two Royal London Cup matches is no significant preparation for a Test match. I mean, it'd be fantastic to see him back, because he's such an important member of England's, all three squads. I think there's any doubt about that. And, you know, I think England very keen to see him in the Ashes in the winter. And, of course, very keen to have him in their T20 World Cup squad as well. I don't think there's any doubt about that as well. So, we'll just wait and see on Joffrey. Should we hear from him? Yoz, you spoke to him. You talked to him about his approach to bowling, his attitudes towards bowling.
I guess I believe in myself so much that I believe I can run in and hit top of off with my East Coast. I don't know if I can actually do it, but I believe that I can.
Have you ever tried it?
Nah, never really had the, never really needed to know if I could do it or not, so I never really tried, but maybe one of these days when I'm in the netting board, I'll probably give it a go.
The reason I asked that question is that I had a bit of run-up trouble, and I used to no ball a lot, and I worked on a run-up in a park, which I then had to sort of visualise on the pitch. So I tried in the nets running up with my eyes shut so that I was having the same run-up as in the park, and it cured my no ball problem.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. I managed to visualise I was in the park, then I ran in the nets as if I was in the park with my eyes shut, and my run-up was okay and I didn't overstep. But how did your run-up, it's a very languid, shortish run-up, how did that evolve?
It's just that was always what you always had, you know. It just worked, and I never really needed to change it or tinker with it. I guess that obviously if it wasn't working, then the coach would probably say, you know, lengthen it or shorten it, but I was just lucky enough I didn't have to do anything with it my whole life. So
it's always been the same?
Yeah, pretty much.
And do you vary the pace a bit? Because, funnily enough, I've measured the speed a bit, and people say, oh, you know, he's only sort of jogging in, but actually your speed is as quick as most other people. It's just that you make running look easier.
Yeah, I guess so, to be honest. But I don't vary the speed. Well, it'd be too hard to do, to be honest. Too much to think about. Even you still got to bowl the ball. So never really varied. I guess obviously if you're tired, it's going to be a little bit slower. If you're fresh, you know, it's going to be a little bit faster. But no, never did it intentionally.
Or perhaps if it's a really exciting moment, would you maybe, I mean, I'm thinking back, of course, to that amazing spell at Lords, Steve Smith's spell. I mean,
yeah, if you're up for it, yeah, that as well.
So you might speed up a little bit, maybe, if you're...
Yeah, if you're feeling good. Feeling good, then you will.
Tell me about your grip, because you've got big hands, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you vary your grip much?
No, not at all.
Right.
Not at all.
So show me how you hold it.
It's normal.
It's normal with the thumb just underneath on the seam, and your fingers are quite close together.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then when you do your variations.
Same grip.
So you change your grip sort of almost in the delivery swing, do you?
Yeah, good.
Like if you had to do your knuckleball now, you'd change your grip sort of as your arm's coming back. Yeah. Is that something that's quite hard to do?
Yes, but yeah, obviously having bigger hands, bigger fingers makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Some people just place it in, so people don't actually do it, which is fair enough. But
when do you decide on the ball you're going to bowl?
It just depends if the batter's moving around. You always preempt bowling the slot ball unless the batter does something, or unless you change the field, or if the captain suggests something, or if the batter doesn't like something. But you always preempt to go stop ball first and then change if necessary.
Do you visualise the ball you're bowling at the start of your run, the ball you're going to bowl? No.
You just say you're going to do it and just straight execute.
One thing about practicing, obviously, you know, this is the stage of the season where quite often you're mixing between white ball and red ball, you know, in the normal season. Do you practice differently if it's a test match or a four-day game compared to white ball?
No, not really. Just the ball changes. You just got to... It's just kicking the length. The length don't change in any cricket.
Do you like to practice a lot before a game, or is it just a few balls and...
The day before the game, we don't do anything. You do the bulk of training leading up to it, but the day before the game, we don't do anything at all.
And on the match day, what about?
A little bit in the middle, and then that's it.
And you quite often like to do a little bit of left arm as well, don't you?
Sometimes. Yeah, it's all warming up.
Yeah.
Warm up, a bit of fun.
Yeah. When you're playing in a match, you're at the start of a spell, have you got kind of a clear plan? I mean, so would you plan an over? Or would you just plan an individual ball?
No, just bang length, and obviously if they get... So good balls get it for four, you don't have to... Like, 50 overs is just boring cricket. You just got to keep bowling the same ball as long as possible. Like, obviously T20 is a bit different. Test is pretty much similar to 50 overs. You just got to be boring. Just be as boring as possible.
Has winning the World Cup made you more confident of your ability in the death overs?
Not really. Didn't change it. To be honest, if a ball more of a ball death overs that went for a lot less, than that's probably the most I've been for in a long time, to be honest.
Although you said that in a blast game,
yeah,
in the blast final, you went for more, but actually that didn't factor. You didn't think of it at all, did you?
Not at all.
No.
I'm glad I didn't, to be honest.
So am I. So is everybody in this country. My overall take on Jofra actually is just he's got this incredibly laid back personality, and it's funny because, you know, when we're making a documentary and he bowls the final ball that wins the game for England, you know, it's this incredible climax, and you want the player to talk about that incredible climax with amazing emotion and sort of excitement, and yet Jofra's very laid back about it all, and almost, well, it was just another ball and I had to make sure that they didn't get more than one run off it. And in a way, although that is not what we want to, you know, articulate the climax of a documentary, at the same time, my point is that's why he was successful, because he didn't get emotional. He just executed, to use a horrible word, and you know, bowled the ball he wanted to bowl in that incredible climax, and England won. He said, "I'd completely forgotten that I bowled a death over, a final over in a match in the blast, the final of the blast, Worcestershire against Sussex. And they were defending something like 20 and they lost. And Jofra bowled the over that cost them the game." And he said, I had forgotten. I'd erased that from my memory before the World Cup final. And just as well he had, because he was able to deliver in a superb way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's, I suppose, part of the skill, isn't it? To be able to put that out of your mind. I mean, those, I don't know, England players who miss penalties in the final of the Euros, I mean, the next time they come to a big penalty moment, they'll want to have put that out of their minds. They'll be exactly the same.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's Jofra, and good luck to him in his gradual rehabilitation. As I said at the start, I'm at the moment touring North Yorkshire with a team that I sometimes play for with my two sons, Callum and Billy. We're touring the North York Moors. One win, one loss so far. And it's just actually beautiful to go back to the grassroots and see the kind of struggles that clubs have to survive, and also meet the volunteers, like the guy at the Goathland Cricket Club in the middle of the North York Moors, who comes down from up on a hill three times a week, spends 3 hours cutting the outfield and rolling the pitch and generally preparing the venue for their matches. But it also shows that, you know, who's going to replace him. And he was saying, this is a guy called Angus Nicholson, he was saying, well, I don't know who's going to replace me when I can't do it anymore, sort of thing. And actually, the creativity of clubs like Goathland, who have a library built into their new pavilion. They do sort of weddings and banquets and things in a marquee out the back. They do various sort of evening things, like not Morris dancing, but there's something called long sword dancing, which is a Yorkshire tradition they have in the clubhouse. So they're making, you know, excellent use of their facilities for other things to enable cricket to be sustained. And that is what cricket needs. And in a way, that is what the 100 is all about, is raising broadcast and sponsorship income to allow the domestic game to be sustained.
So the inevitable question, Yoz: runs, wickets, catches, drop catches, missed fields. How did it go?
Oh, well, now you mention it. No runs or wickets, because I didn't bat or bowl. I did give out our best player, LBW, absolutely plumb, because I did a bit of umpiring, but he was on about 60, so I didn't...
How did he take it? How did he take it?
And he walked. He virtually walked. I am sad to say the only contribution I made on the field was I let a very powerful shot straight through my legs for four. And I got a bit of a roasting from the spin bowler that I was I was fielding for. Other than that, I actually was going to bowl, but we bowled the opposition out for 50, so I wasn't required.
Well, that's a shame for the local batters. They didn't get a chance to face you and to whack you into a cow field or something like that. Anyway, but it's great. It's great. You're still...
Well, that's going to happen. Right? Don't worry. It's going to happen. We've got three more games to go, so that's definitely... There'll be a Hughes hit over the boundary into a cow field or a sheep farm.
Great. Well, report back next week. Next week, of course, the Test series between England and India begins, and we'll have a look at that in our next podcast. Thanks very much for listening today. Speak to you soon. Podcast Network.